Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and I'm talking with our chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico, Steve Pierce, former congressman of the 2nd Congressional District of New Mexico. And Steve, welcome to the program, and please, I'm anxious to find out, give us an election update.
Well, the update depends on which side you're listening to, Derek. The Democrats, Joe Biden, all are declaring that this thing is over. We should all just hold our tongue, and there's nothing actual to substantiate the allegations that there was fraud and corruptions. Never mind those eyes that saw the things occurring. Are we going to believe our lying eyes, or are we going to believe what they tell us? So recall in New Mexico that the Republican poll challengers were eliminated out of the process where the certification of absentee ballots was occurring. That's where they're required by law to check for a signature and the last four digits of the Social Security number, and they have to match. That's in order to show that the voter is legitimately registered and is legal to vote in New Mexico. That's the important piece. The next three phases of the ballot, opening the outer envelope, then the next phase, opening the inner envelope, and then finally, running the ballot through the machine. Those are of little importance compared to the first piece, and we got eliminated out of the process. We took it to the Supreme Court of New Mexico, again, in a very politicized decision. The Democrat Supreme Court decided they wouldn't hear it, so they'd let that malfeasance go on. Then when we were allowed in, we were pushed further and further back away from where the counting was going to where we weren't actually able to do anything productive at all. So we had challengers in more spaces than probably ever in New Mexico. You could see, if you were there on site, a lot of those county clerks became belligerent, became just very aggressive. They didn't like that we were there. They're not used to us watching what they're doing. Well, nationwide, the same things were going on. Exactly. A playbook was written by the Democrats, and so you're able to see what was happening. But then the Dominion software, every county, every voting machine in New Mexico is one of those machines. And so we see how that votes were changed and dropped, changed from Trump to Biden, or it just dropped out of the system. It's estimated that about 1,900,000+ votes in Pennsylvania were dropped off of Trump's count. And so a lot still goes on in the Republican circles. The Democrats are again claiming, oh, there's nothing to think about here. Let's just keep moving. Now, red states came out with a huge article, and they're talking about Republican gains, more seats in the House. Now, keep in mind that on election night, Fox News said the Democrats were going to maintain control and gain 5 more seats. Nancy Pelosi herself back in August said that the Democrats would maintain control, that in fact they would pick up somewhere around 15 seats. Right now, the Republicans have flipped 12 of the seats from Democrat to Republican, and not one sitting Republican has lost. And so this idea that there was some sort of a blue wave is just being discounted as the days move forward. Now, the New York Times had put an article in back a couple of months ago talking about the fact there were 27 toss-up seats. Across the nation, 27 seats would be toss-ups. The Republicans have at this point won 26 of those 27 seats and were running ahead in Iowa, too. If we win there, then it's going to be every toss-up seat has been won by Republicans. And so you have to ask yourself, how is it, if Joe Biden won, how is it that you had this red wave taking place in the House? You had all of the enthusiasm, and hundreds of thousands of people turned out this past weekend to protest in Washington, D.C. on behalf of Donald Trump. And so you have the red wave occurring in the House, the unbridled enthusiasm for Trump as a candidate, the lack of enthusiasm for Joe Biden. Then how did Biden win? We must ask that question. If we're going to have legitimate elections throughout the rest of our history, we're going to have to stop and ask that question, how did this occur? Now, Sidney Powell, she's one of the attorneys for the president, has been on Fox News multiple times, and I want to share a clip that she had over the weekend talking about the legal things that were going on, the fact that the Democrats control this Dominion software. It controls some of the other softwares that are held by other states that didn't use the Dominion process. And so I think you're going to be surprised at what all that she says. But in addition, we have heard at length from the Democrats about the Russian interference and about foreign interference in our elections. It is looking like that part of the ownership of this Dominion software may be in Venezuela, may be in Cuba. So they are very practiced at using the software in those elections. And so listen while Sidney Powell talks.
Well, I can hardly wait to put forth all the evidence we have collected on Dominion, starting with the fact it was created to produce altered voting results in Venezuela for Hugo Chavez and then shipped internationally to manipulate votes for purchase in other countries, including this one. It was funded by money from Venezuela and Cuba, and China has a role in it also. So if you want to talk about foreign election interference, we certainly have it now. We have staggering statistical evidence. We have staggering testimony from witnesses, including one who was personally in briefings when all of this was discussed and planned, beginning with Hugo Chavez and how it was designed there, and then saw it happening in this country. As soon as the state shut down on election night and stopped counting, those are the states where the most egregious problems occurred. We also need to look at, and we're beginning to collect evidence on the financial interests of some of the governors and secretaries of state who actually bought into the Dominion systems, surprisingly enough. Hunter Biden-type graft to line their own pockets by getting a voting machine in that would either make sure their election was successful or they got money for their family from it.
The December deadlines are approaching for electors, and just as we saw in 2000 with Bush v. Gore, how critical are those deadlines and how urgent does that make your investigation and discovery?
Well, for fraud this serious, I think even if the states are stupid enough to go ahead and certify the votes where we know the machines were operating and producing altered election results, if they're stupid enough to do that, then they will be set aside by the fraud also. I mean, we are talking about hundreds of thousands of votes. President Trump won this election in a landslide. It's going to be irrefutable, and patriots are coming forward every day, all day, faster than we can collect their information with the testimony they're willing to give under oath about how their votes were stolen and how the machines operated. They were updated the night of the election, sometimes after the election. We've got statistical evidence that shows hundreds of thousands of votes being just put in and replicated. There needs to be a massive criminal investigation, and it's going to affect millions of voters and elections.
That clip was from Lou Dobbs on the Fox News Channel.
So keep your seatbelt fastened, because I think there are tremendous turns left in this electoral process.
Steve Pearce and I will return in just a moment and talk about what's going on in those close U.S. Senate races in just a moment on Inside New Mexico.
Attention, New Mexico veterans. If you were honorably discharged from the U.S. Armed Forces, you've earned state and federal benefits, and the New Mexico Department of Veteran Services is standing by to assist you. State benefits include a veteran's property tax exemption, education and training, and transportation services. We can also assist with claims for federal VA benefits. The state of New Mexico and this radio station thank you for your service. More information at nmveterans.org or 1-866-433-8387.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico. We are talking with Steve Pearce. Steve, we talked about the presidential election. What's going on in the Senate?
Well, the Senate is really up for grabs. Again, as the Democrats led into this election, they were looking at the polls and they were brandishing their weapons and saying that they were not only going to take up 15 seats in the House, that they were going to take control of the Senate. That meant they were going to win at least 4 seats, maybe more in the Senate. Well, actually, what happened is that the Republicans, first off, picked up the seat in Alabama. So that took us from a 53-47 majority to 54. So in Colorado, the Democrats did succeed in knocking off Cory Gardner. Colorado has become just a blue hotbed. And so that was not a great surprise. Also out in Arizona, another friend of mine, Martha McSally, ran for re-election in the Senate. She was beaten there. So the Democrats picked up two. We got one of theirs, but two of the seats have yet to be declared. In fact, there's going to have to be a special runoff in the first week of January. This is hugely important because right now the balance of power is 50 seats are held by Republicans, 48 by Democrats. And so if the Democrats were to win both of these seats in Georgia, they would effectively have control of the Senate. It would be a 50-50 tie. But if Biden wins, then Kamala Harris would be the deciding vote on every vote in the Senate. And so big stakes playing out in these special elections. Now, the reason that we've got two seats up for grabs in one state is that a friend of mine, Johnny Isaacson, had become sick in his Senate tenure. He had stepped down, and Senator Loeffler from Georgia was nominated and placed into his position. Well, she had to run always. If you have a Senate appointment, you have to run in the next election. But the regular scheduled six-year tenure for the sitting senator, Senator Perdue, his time was up and his election was held in this cycle also. So two seats in Georgia. Now, Loeffler was pampered by a friend of mine, Doug Collins, who was serving in the House with me. He went over and ran for Senate against Loeffler, saying that she was appointed and not elected and that he was the better conservative. Well, she beat him by 12 points, but it kept her from getting to that 50% threshold that does not require a runoff. Meanwhile, in the other race, Senator Perdue had reached like 49.8%, and so that race has to be played out all over again in the runoff. Neither one of them had to get to 50%. That was the case here. Neither one were at 50%. Senator Perdue has about a 2 or 3 point lead, and so we should win one of those seats, but it's absolutely essential that we win one of those seats in order for Republicans to maintain the majority. If Joe Biden is able to prevail and keep these illegal votes in his column and becomes president, and if the Senate is controlled by Democrats, and if Nancy Pelosi is in charge of the House, unmitigated harm can come to the U.S. economy. Unmitigated harm can happen to our trade relations, to the reestablishment of the American manufacturers that was well underway under President Trump. So the stakes are very, very large in this Georgia Senate, with both seats being up for grabs and neither one of them being determined in this regular election cycle.
How do we know, Steve, that the same tactics with the votes in the presidential election aren't being used in the senatorial elections?
Well, yeah, that is the essential question, and one which would be asked. But the Secretary of State in Georgia is actually a Republican, but I think a Republican in name only, because he is causing a scam to transpire, calling it a hand recount. He says he's also going to be done in 24 or 48 hours. You see the real hand count going on in Wisconsin, going to take weeks to get that done, and that's what he should be doing. But instead, he's got some sort of a hoax that he's pulling, and no one is going to be served well by the supposed recount that is not a recount. Again, he's keeping Republican poll watchers and poll challengers from being close enough to actually see what they're doing. No one can tell anything. There's just people moving around in a room. All the watchers, the press, everybody else is 50 feet away. That's, again, the Democrat playbook, but it's being put into place by this Republican that has never liked Trump, and so you have to feel like it's personal. But my belief is if they had a fair vote system, that definitely Perdue would come out without a runoff, and maybe even Loeffler could get to the point of not having a runoff if the votes were legal and they were tallied legally. So this recount that's taking place right now, again, will not answer the questions that you asked. And unfortunately, it puts the whole control of the U.S. up for grabs. But if both those Senate seats flip over to Democrats, then you've got massive, massive troubles waiting for us as Democrats move towards defunding police, as they move toward the socialist standards that were preached by Bernie Sanders. And by the way, keep in mind that Biden probably was the beneficiary of this Dominion software and beating Bernie Sanders. I was always curious why the Biden camp never seemed worried about Sanders. And now then you're starting to understand why. He never really campaigned for president, either in the primary or in the general. It's like he knew the answer to the quiz was that he was going to win, and he really didn't have to do anything. Now then, it's all making sense, because you just don't act that way in a campaign to become the next president of the United States. And so just tremendous, tremendous irregularities occurring throughout the nation. But I think this is all going to end up in the Supreme Court. That makes the Trump nominee of Amy Coney Barrett even more important as we come down these final days to the election. Now, I'll also tell you that if the Supreme Court actually gets the case and actually begins to hear the arguments, and the arguments are beginning to develop that the fraud exists, that I believe exists, then you're going to see the left come unhinged. So stay tuned. A lot of things still to be decided in this election process, and we will stay tuned. We'll keep you focused on it and keep you informed about what's going on. So stay tuned for Section 3. We're going to be talking about the abortion clinic at Santa Teresa. We're going to be talking about People Magazine and a family that fled the law here in Hobbs. That got nationwide attention. So stay tuned. A lot left in Section 3.
On behalf of the New Mexico Department of Health, take COVID-19 precautions. Wash your hands frequently for 20 seconds. Don't touch your face. Use a tissue or your elbow to catch your sneeze or cough. Avoid large gatherings and close contact with sick people, especially if you are elderly or high risk. If you have a cough, fever, or shortness of breath, stay home from work or school. Do not go to the ER or doctor's office without first calling the coronavirus hotline. And avoid all unnecessary out-of-state travel. Help prevent the spread of COVID-19.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico, and I am talking with our chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. Steve, an interesting article in People Magazine about a couple that fled the state from your part of New Mexico.
This is another one of the examples of how poorly the administration is actually doing in New Mexico. Michelle Lujan Grisham came in saying that she was going to have the best effort for children that we've ever seen. And this particular case is really a deeply saddening case. You had a Romanian couple here with four children, and CYFD, with good purpose, pulled those children away from them. And the children were all like 7, 8, 10, and down to maybe 6 months old. So just young children. It looks like that they definitely were abusing the kids. They had them out with them, signs on the side of the road saying, hey, help us out. We're destitute. And then we got these four hungry kids. So they're definitely exploiting the kids. But then there were indicators that maybe they were selling the kids to sexual predators for monetary gain. Those were all whispers that were out there. Well, they took the children away, and then without much explanation, except that they said, well, parents are the best place. If we can make it work, parents are the best place to put kids. Not if you've got this kind of abuse going on, parents are not the best place to put the kids, because that kind of abuse almost never gets fixed. It is almost always a problem. And so they put the kids back with the parents, and then the parents fled the state. And that's way back in May. So many times you will get accusations that the police didn't do their job or whatever. No, the police could not legally act until an actual report was filed by CYFD, and that report was not filed. So the police couldn't take action, because in the eyes of the law, that no irregularity had occurred, because CYFD said, well, this is what we wanted, and we did it, and everything's okay. There is a federal law that says you can't leave a state once this kind of a question is in the air until you're given permission. You have to ask, and then they keep up with you because they want to know that the kids are being treated fairly and properly. Well, that was not occurring, and in fact, they didn't know where that the family went. Suddenly, about 2 weeks ago, the youngest of the group of four kids showed up in the emergency room. Someone, a woman that's believed to be the mom, simply dropped the kid off and never came back to pick it up. The baby had a cracked skull and now is permanently blind, is permanently mentally disabled because of the treatment that the baby received. Before she departed, evidently the mom said something about it being caused by the 5-year-old. a five-year-old doesn't break skulls and cause permanent blindness. And so you have this tragedy for the one, but then you have the other three that nobody knew anything about. The Georgia authorities came here, were trying to interview and find out what was going on. A couple was eventually arrested in Texas, but the Georgia authorities were really trying to pin this case down, found a very uncooperative CYFD here in New Mexico. And so I think you're going to hear a lot about this case. Again, it shows how dangerous it is to be a child in New Mexico, that if you're here, that's one of the most dangerous places on earth to be, is New Mexico under CYFD supervision. So, Derek, we've had this explosion of COVID-19 cases that, according to the governor, is out of control. And so she issued her health orders, shutting everything back down the way it was back in March. Now, shutting us down in March didn't work. Shutting down all of those nations in Europe didn't work. What it did is destroy many of those European economies beyond repair, and it's doing the same thing to New Mexico's economy. So we're doing the same thing that hasn't worked before, and we're expecting to get better results. But we're going to be shut down during Thanksgiving, and that's going to be an emotional toll on both children, parents, grandparents. There's no more important time than the holidays. Christmas, Thanksgiving, those times are where we not only join together for family bonds, but we join together for the spiritual implications of both holidays. One, to remember to be thankful and grateful. Gratitude is one of the most important characteristics of the human being. But the second, then, the birth of Christ, the Christmas season, and that joyful time as we consider what all it means to celebrate the word Christ, celebrate the word Christmas. And so we have both these holidays basically being locked down by the governor. Small businesses, I'm just telling you, they're at their wits' end. I think that we're going to lose a lot who will never bother opening up again. And so we are facing new problems. The governor seems to discount, and we had reports from a conference call that her chief physician was on, and somebody asked about the suicides. He said just abruptly, "I don't want to hear about that. We're not going to discuss it." Well, that's the kind of attitude that has brought us to this point, to where that the governor is willing to accept any damage to the student in school, any damage to the family through strained relationships, substance abuse, whatever it is, the financial hurdles that are facing families that are just trying to make ends meet and suddenly they can't go to their job for another 2 weeks. How do you fix that? And so the governor discounts all of the effects on the human except whether or not you have COVID. Now, again, I always mention South Dakota because they still haven't shut down. They still have a less infection rate than we do. They're not having this great surge of rates. They've got their kids going to school there. They've got life running along pretty normally. They're dealing with COVID, and they're dealing with it actually fairly well. And so the governor's health order, again, has many shaking their heads, many just trying to figure out how to get out of here. So you have that situation. Now, tangent to that is the abortion clinic in Santa Teresa. When everything else was shut down, all essential services, Texas declared abortion to be non-essential. New Mexico, the governor said, well, abortion is essential. And so you've had this flood of people coming across the border at El Paso, maybe some coming from Mexico. I don't know that for sure, but people coming from El Paso, from all over Texas, knowing they can get an abortion at Santa Teresa. Now it turns out, according to speculation and according to rumors, that maybe the director of that facility has COVID, and maybe that it had become a hotbed for COVID in the Doña Ana County region. So reportedly, all of those abortion cases are being sent to Albuquerque. Now, we wonder if there's going to be a new outbreak that centers around that area in Albuquerque where that abortion clinic, the Southwest Women's Options, operates. And so huge questions coming up there. I'm sympathetic to the challenges that the governor faces. But to me, it looks like she is in D.C. applying for a job in the administration. She's wanting to get a secretarial position. She should be here taking care of her responsibilities in this state when we've got the tremendous problems that we have, both with COVID and with the economy, with our schools and with our kids not being able to go to schools. We have plenty of work here to be done. And so if the governor is actually over applying for a position, then shame on her. So, Derek, as we close out this segment, Breitbart on the 12th of November had a very good article by Tom Fitton, and he's the one that was declaring before the elections that we could see the problems coming. And he also declared that we could see the problems coming and they were going to be state by state. And he said that the problems in the election were going to be because it was just so possible to cheat that that different officials were going to just find it attractive to go ahead and manipulate the outcomes. And so he talks about in his article, and I would recommend you go on Breitbart and take a look at it, is Tom Fitton of Breitbart. But he talks about the forewarnings that we had on all of these problems with the elections, and now they're playing out exactly like he forecast. He mentions that we have millions of people who are on the voting rolls and they don't exist or don't live in the states. And when you got that many people, then mischief is available. Also, the inundation of paper, both paper ballots, but also paper applications for absentee ballots, that whole wave of paper, again, bogged things down to where the malfeasance was possible. So, Derek, again, we've mentioned all through this show that it's not a time to be looking away and forgetting. This is going to be a pivotal moment for the nation, and I encourage people to stay tuned, to watch what's going on, because our republic is hanging in the balance, frankly.
Thank you, Steve. I've been talking with our chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. And if you, our listeners, would like to get involved with the Republican Party or just keep up to date with what's going on, check out the website at gopnm.org. There's a Facebook page and a Twitter account. The handle is at New Mexico GOP. You can call party headquarters at 505-298-3662. That's 505-298-3662. For Steve Pierce, I'm Derek Underhill. We look forward to meeting with you again next week, right here on Inside New Mexico.